A reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. A reading from Ecclesiastes 12, 9-14. Not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails, given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now all has been heard, here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. The word of the Lord.
Thanks, Robin. Well, good morning. Welcome. I'm Colin, the pastor. Good to add my welcome as well, and welcome if you're watching on Zoom. But, you know, I've not always been a pastor. I wasn't born one or anything, you know, I didn't come out of a shell. I used to work for about 20 years. I worked as a radiographer doing medical imaging. And when I was finishing up my old job at the old Royal Adelaide Hospital, to go to Bible college full time to train to be a pastor, my colleagues there were just so pleased for me. They were really more excited about it than me, I think. Really happy for me. Now, why was that? Hardly any of them would call themselves Christian. Lots of them, of those who were really pleased for me, would probably say they didn't believe in God. Yet I got pats on the back and good on yous. So why is that? I think it's because we all at heart, every so often, have that same question that we just read in verse 3. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? And we feel the implied answer is not much, or at least not more than it takes out of me physically, mentally, emotionally. I think what my good colleagues at the RA were enjoying was the idea that I was doing something so obviously not for the usual reasons of money, status, career, or prospects. Because we all know those things don't deliver, do they? And they can feel like a bit of a treadmill. Whereas they suspected I was doing something I have a heart for, even if they don't believe it's true, that the idea that doing something you got a heart for might actually deliver the goods. Well, that's my guess anyway. I can't claim to speak for them. That's just, I'm just guessing what they were thinking. And it's great to officially welcome us to Trinity Church, Morfitt Vale. And a reasonable question for you right now might be, why on earth has he chosen to start with this miserable reading? Because it is a bit, isn't it? I was at a wedding recently, and I've chosen to enjoy this now, this little game I play. Looking out for the look of dismay. If you know when you get sat a bunch of people you don't know, and you try to work out how you know the bride and groom, I look out for the look of dismay generated when the random you've never met before discovers they've been sat next to the pastor. Oh, the poor thing's grown. And then I spend the rest of the evening trying to convince them I'm not as bad as they think I might be. And I don't know, when I first read today's passage, I was thinking, imagine getting stuck to this barrel of laughs on your table at a function or something. Everything is meaningless. All things are wearisome. No one remembers. Much wisdom, much sorrow. More knowledge, more grief. It reminds me of an orderly at a hospital I used to work out, and his nickname was Happy, because he was always like this. He always looked and sounded really miserable. And yet, we can relate, can't we? Even if you don't feel like this today, we've all felt like this at times, haven't we? Life seems inherently frustrating. And lots of the time, the reason people don't want to sit next to the vicar or the deep thinker is we want to keep these questions of what is it all about? Is it all worth it? These feelings of pointlessness squashed down. We want to keep them squashed down or at least in check. We don't want anyone to raise them. So let me say up front as we begin this series, this book of Ecclesiastes, it isn't meant to be comfortable. It's meant to make us squirm, face these big questions of life. It's not going to leave us there. It's true, the things we've heard read today are true, but there's good news truth to know as well. But Ecclesiastes is very honest and real about how hard and frustrating life can be. You see, the Bible is refreshingly honest and real about how life really is. It's not a puff piece. Because I don't know, but so much of how people present these days, or so much of what religions demand, they seem to live on a different Instagram perfect planet to you and I, where things are so much easier. But the Bible isn't scared of doubts or talking about how much we suffer or about how life often isn't fair and how it is really, really frustrating sometimes. The Bible knows what it is to have an existential crisis. The Bible knows what it is to have a plain old bad day. In fact, the Bible's really good, as we've just heard, and as we've got in front of us, the Bible's really good at wording these things better than we could. You know, if you've got complaints you want to make to God, you'll probably find a psalm that's beaten you to it. The Bible is very honest and real, and that means being part of Trinity Church, Morfitt Vale, is never going to be about pretending we've got everything together all the time. Pretending that life is easy. Now look, no doubt it is true that belonging to Jesus means we have a deep-seated peace that passes understanding, a joy and assurance that can't be budged by even the worst days. For Christians, the worst thing is never the last thing. But let's be honest, we all find life to be a frustrating, uninspiring grind sometimes, often even. And we're best helped by getting to know one another well enough to be able to be real with one another and really care for one another. Because often following Jesus will make life harder, not easier, but it's still a life to the full that we'll never regret. And we need each other's help to live it. So God's plan for his people in this wearisome world is church. It's not being alone. So let's have a look at this Ecclesiastes. Keep the reading in front of you and check what I'm saying, because that's where the gold is. So I'm just trying to help us think about it and apply it. And our first heading, there's an outline if you leaflet if you find that helpful. Foggy frustrations. So we get these little editorial introductions and outro at the beginning and the end of the book. First one, these are the words of the teacher. This could well be King Solomon, Israel's richest king, son of David, like it says. He fits the bill of what all that this teacher will go on to be able to do. Or it could be somebody writing as if they were Solomon. Whichever, teacher here means literally leader of the assembly. So a bit like a teacher in a school class or a pastor like me standing here in front of you. So the important thing is this is not, look at this guy who doesn't know God. Look how miserable he is. You're miserable if you don't know God. No, I think this is a man of God talking to God's people about frustrations everyone feels. And I've called them foggy frustrations because it helps us understand the language, the word being used here. So have a look at verse 2. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. So the word meaningless there, that's the translation in the NIV that we use and had read. In other translations, it's vanity, as in there's no point, it's pointless. The Christian Standard Bible has absolute futility. And I think all of those, meaningless, vanity, futility, I think they're a bit more negative than what the Hebrew word being translated actually says. It's the word hebel, which literally means breath or mist. And how to translate it depends on the context. It appears, when we need to get this right, because it appears 35 times in Ecclesiastes, hebel, mist, vapour. So if you think of, you know, your cup of tea on a cold day, you see the steam rising from it. It's that kind of concept. You can watch it, you can feel it even, but you can't grasp hold of it. It's definitely real, it's there, you can observe it, but it's soon gone as well. You can never make it exactly the same, but it always looks pretty much the same. It's not new. And this is the concept the teacher concludes life is like. So again, meaningless, I think, is a bit strong because, well, he's writing this book, isn't he? With a point, it goes somewhere. There are things to be said about the world. And it's not vain, as in it's not without purpose. Life is going somewhere. That's why we had the end of the book read, because I don't want to leave you in despair. It's all heading somewhere. And from time to time throughout the book, the teacher, he does see God at work with purpose. He does reach some conclusions. So better to think of vapour, fog, mist. That reflects better what the teacher thinks of life. And again, we can relate, can't we? Life's hard to grasp. How are you going, you might ask me. It's hard to define anything more than, yeah, good, thanks, isn't it? So let's have a look at some of the things that make life like vapour or mist that the teacher talks about. Well, first of all, nothing ever happens. There was a song by the Scottish band, Delamitri, which is a lot like this chapter. Good song, I've listened to. The chorus goes, and nothing ever happens. Nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. Nothing ever happens. Nothing happens at all. They'll burn down the synagogues at 6 o'clock. And we'll all go along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Gets across the kind of thing the teacher's trying to get across. And he shows how much our existence is constantly repeating loops. Verse 4, people are born, they have kids, they die. Born, kids, die. Over and over, rinse and repeat. Verse 5, the sun rises, sets, it rises again. Same old story. Verse 6, the wind blows all around the earth, nowhere else to go, on and on and on. Verse 7, all streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, they return again. Stuck in a loop, in a cycle, going on forever, without much variation. Just for a little brain break, we've got a little video clip here of a sketch that gets it across. So by two guys called Mitchell and Webb. And here's the setup is a teacher who is sick of teaching fractions learns an important lesson about why his students might not actually be small, noisy, stupid people who don't know anything. So let's have a look at this.
Knock, knock. You got a minute, Ken?
Of course, Headmaster. But I have got a lesson in half an hour where I expect we'll be doing fractions again.
Yeah.
Just when you think you're getting somewhere, they go off for the summer, come back, and it's like you're talking Hungarian.
Yeah, I think I can see the problem here. They're different children.
Yeah, it's like they're different children.
No, they are different children. Every school year, you finish teaching one group of children, and then a different group of children arrive who, crucially, don't know what you just spent the last year teaching to some completely different people.
What? That's not fair. I was given to understand at teacher training college that I would teach children maths. I would teach them and then they would be taught. But now you're telling me that however many children I teach maths to, you'll find some more who don't know maths and make me teach them, knowing that as soon as they get it, they too will be gone and I'll be back to square one with some other bunk. I would never have agreed to that.
It's very much the job, Ken.
The job is for me to carry on teaching children fractions until I've taught all the children in the world or I die, whichever happens first. How could you begin to pay me enough for such a feat of Sisyphean futility?
This is very much why I became a head teacher. I just do the admin now.
One for the teachers. So, but you feel that sense of frustration. There's nothing wrong with fraction. The maths is a good thing, but that sense of frustration because this good thing just happens over and over and over again. Even the best thing can make you fed up when it's the same thing over and over. Verse 8, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. And what's it all for? Because let's imagine we do catch all the breaks we need. We have all the ingredients and relationships and career and right place at the right time to live the best, happiest life. Then what? Sooner or later, it's all forgotten. Verse 11, no one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. For example, put your hand up. All right, let's start easy. Put your hand up if you know, remember your grandparents' names. And keep your hand up if you know your great-grandparents' names. Not many. Now, presumably they were important to your mum and dad. They were their grandparents, weren't they? No judgment, no guilt trip. We forget, don't we? Maybe they had great lives, but all those tears, fears, loves and laughs were forgotten. And if they did achieve something amazing, verse 9, what has been will be again, what's been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. It's all the same old, it gets forgotten anyway, and it's never fully understandable. It never fully makes sense, next heading. We'll see in the coming weeks, the teacher attacks this question, what can be gained under the sun? He goes at it like a science project, throwing all his time and considerable resources at trying everything on for size and observing how it goes. If anyone is equipped to come up with a serious, informed answer, it's this guy. And yet he declares, verse 16, I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. In other words, life in this world will never be fully understood. Just when we think we've figured it out, it's like mist. It's gone or it's changed. We can't grab hold of it and keep it solid. Well, so far, so depressing, right? But again, we mustn't be too negative. In the grand sweep of Ecclesiastes, the teacher is not telling us to give up on life. We can and should still do good things. And we'll see that as we get into it. This is very much just an introduction. But here's an example of a good thing. I was reading about the man with the golden arm, James Harrison. Have you heard of him? He died last year, but Harrison's blood contained a rare antibody, anti-D, which is used to make medication given to pregnant mothers whose blood is at risk of attacking their unborn babies when their blood types are incompatible. Sarah can correct me on the doctory bits afterwards, ask her. Anyway, James started donating his blood plasma when he was 18 and continued to do so every 2 weeks until he was 81. And they reckon his blood has helped prevent the deaths of over 2 million babies, including two of his own grandchildren. Isn't that nice? Now that's a legacy. And the teacher in Ecclesiastes will go on to identify good, wise ways we can spend our lives. And the narrator concludes in chapter 12, the teacher really is wise. He wrote what he wrote was upright and true. Ecclesiastes confronts us with life being like mist, being like grasping at fog. But that doesn't mean life is meaningless. It doesn't mean life is without purpose. We won't ever fully get it, understand it. But there is lots we can understand, lots we can enjoy or avoid. And we'll see that throughout the book. Frustration, yes. But also how to live in a frustrating world. How to make the best of it. What to expect. And a key part of making sense of this mist-like life is to understand, why is it like this? Why is it like this? It's like this because God has caused it to be like this. Verse 13, what a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. Life being like mist, being cyclical, being hard to understand, it's God who's burdened us with it being this way. Later in the book, he puts it like this, verse 13. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? If life seems bent out of shape, it's God who has made it that way. Why? Why make the world crooked? Why not just straighten it out for us and make it easy? Well, it's for our ultimate good. It's a partial judgment by God to limit the damage we can do ourselves. Chapter 7, verse 29. This only have I found. God created mankind upright, but they have gone in search of many schemes. And left to our own devices, left to our own schemes, if life didn't limit and frustrate us, our schemes would make for ourselves a living hell of our own making. Not just frustration, but horror. So God has limited us on purpose. I trust over in Trinity Kids, I trust they'll be having a great time right now in the lovely shiny classrooms that we hire for them. But I trust also that Nat and the team have deliberately frustrated any schemes that any child might have to open bags of glitter or get the permanent texters out. That would be a good thing to limit over in Trinity Kids, wouldn't it? God frustrates us to frustrate the damage our evil could do and point us to our need of being saved by God so that we realise the trouble we're in without him. So it's the same old, it all gets forgotten anyway, it's never fully understandable. And that's before we see the teacher gets into work and money and power and time and wisdom and death and all the ways that they can be frustrating. What hope is there? Well, there's God's, Ecclesiastes is God's good goad. That's our final heading. I'll explain that in a minute. There is hope in Ecclesiastes. But a lot like, you know, when we looked at the book of Revelation last term, a lot like that, if it makes, Ecclesiastes makes you feel uncomfortable, frustrated, Well, be uncomfortable. Be frustrated. There's a reason God had this book included in the Bible in these words and not a set of dot points or prepositions or fluffy success stories. We go through frustrations the long way around. Feel Ecclesiastes the long way around. Because it's God's good goad. Verse 11, the words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. So a goad is the pointy end of a shepherd's stick used to jab wayward sheep or a bigger stick for oxen to get them to go in the right direction so they don't get lost. And we have a good shepherd. Jesus described himself as the good shepherd who knows his sheep and lays his life down for us. So read the whole of Ecclesiastes this week. Feel the helpful, loving jabs of this pointy stick. That's what Ecclesiastes is. And as you do, I've been reading a book. Sorry, I meant to do a slide for this, but it's called Everything is Never Enough by Bobby Jameson. Well, I've read the first chapter. I don't want to sound cleverer than I am. But a helpful way of thinking about the book as you read it. If you think of the teacher writing on three floors. So on the ground floor, he's doing his experiment. He's trying things out. He's living life. He's gathering observations. And often he finds that wearisome and despairing. Seeing the same kind of frustrations we all see. So yeah, at that level he finds it life is wanting. On the next floor up, he's less about observing surfaces, more about discerning depths. And this is where he sees that life is good. So what's the difference? Well, the difference is he's bringing God into the equation. He's bringing God to bear in what he observes. He sees life is a gift from God. All the million things, even frustrating things that make it up, are a gift from God. Things can be absurd and frustrating at the same time as being a great gift. And then on the third level, where he rarely goes, but he goes only a few times, he gets a different viewpoint with two crucial reference points. Fear God, because he is going to judge all you do. Fear God, because he's going to judge all you do. And we saw that in chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. Now, all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Fear God. So not as in be terrified of him, but live life as the gift from him that it is, for him. Keep his commandments. God knows we can't work it all out ourselves. He knows that we'll guess wrong how to get the best out of life. And so he tells us how to live. And the solid ground we can stand on is that however mist-like and ungraspable life seems to us, God won't miss a second of it. It might seem to disappear to us, but God sees it all, he remembers it all, and he gives it the significance it's due. The trouble is, of course, there's plenty of every second of our life that we'd rather God forgot about, aren't there? Each of us contributes in our own way to the frustration and despair and vanity of life with our own sin, with our own failures to love God and love people as we know we should. Each of us have added to the chaos, made things more futile. But Jesus, God the Son, left the solid certainty of heaven to enter into our foggy, wearisome world, to live in it just as we do. He came in from outside to enter the closed loop so that he could save us, so that he could pay for our sin with his own life, so we can be offered the solid ground of forgiveness, peace with God forever. And in Jesus' resurrection, he's broken that cycle of sin and death, meaning if we trust in him, we can too. Have you ever driven in thick fog? It's pretty scary. All you can do is slow down and keep your eyes fixed on the line at the side of the road and let it guide you. If you're lost in the fog of life, if you're lost in the fog of sin, just fix your eyes on Jesus. Trust him. Grasp hold of him. He is solid ground. To wrap up then, life until Jesus returns to make all things new will be frustrating. It will be wearisome. It'll be a grind. And I challenge anyone, believer or not, hold Ecclesiastes up to your life and tell me it ain't so. But at least Ecclesiastes helps us to know why. It helps set our expectations. Bad things will happen to good people. The best laid, good, godly plans will sometimes turn to custard. And that's okay. God is in control. God cares. And in Jesus, he has begun a work to do something about it permanently that will come to completion at the right time. Ecclesiastes shows us that life is like mist, cyclical, forgotten, hard to understand. But that's not all that's true about it. It is a gift from God. A great illustration I couldn't improve on. Des Smith at Locklease, he's written a good study guide on this, on Ecclesiastes. He points out, Des says he loves ice cream. Who doesn't love? I love ice cream. But he points out that ice cream is frustrating. You know, it melts. As soon as you serve it, it starts destroying itself. Doesn't last outside the freezer. But we don't say, oh, well, that's frustrating. You just won't bother with it. Otherwise, you'd never have ice cream. We eat the ice cream. We enjoy it. Life does have meaning, does have purpose. There is much to enjoy, much to crack on with and make the best of. And God sees it all. And in Jesus, we have solid hope. We can entrust our lives to him, that he will bring us into a new creation with no frustration, no weariness, no despair. And God cares enough for you and I that we get there by giving us this realistic, saying it how it really is, pointy stick of Ecclesiastes to keep turning to him and trusting in him. So I'm really looking forward to jabbing us with it over the next few weeks. Okay. Let's pray. Lord God, thank you for the variety of your word. Sometimes it's just like really weird and very confronting, and sometimes a bit miserable to listen to, like sitting next to an awkward person at a wedding. But Lord, thank you for Ecclesiastes, that it's your wise goad. Please help us to endure being prodded and poked and found out where we are, so that we keep turning to you, trusting in Jesus. Thank you that he is solid ground. We can hold on to him with great certainty and a peace that passes understanding. Amen.